Tonight's shir, Parshas Vayetze. Yaakov Avinu makes his way to Haran to set the basis of Beis Yisrael. And the Torah relates, based on Chazal, that he was making his way to Haran, which is Iraq. And he's passing by the Shomron, Beit Shan, the Golan, Syria, and he finally makes his way to Iraq, and he says, "Oi," he says, "how could it be that I passed by the place where my forefathers davened, in other words, the Makom HaMikdash, and I didn't daven there?" So what happened? Since he, at the moment that he was Maharher, he thought, you know, I better go back. That alone opened up the doors, and he had Kfitza Sa'aretz. The land became smaller, and he got to the Makom HaMikdash. The Makom HaMikdash itself moved its place, went to Beit El, and came towards him, and he was able to daven there. So what do we see from here? See this tremendous one. Yaakov Avinu, when he did daven there, he fell asleep, he had this dream, he had all those tremendous promises. All this happened, why? Because he was meharher, he thought to go back. He didn't even start running. He just thought to go back, and all of a sudden everything opened up. So we see from here, says the Saba Minavardak, that Chazal tell us that if we open up for Hashem, like a chudo shel machat, we open up just a little bit, like a pinhead, then what happens? In return, Hashem will open up for us huge areas where wagons can come through. Aye, he says, where sometimes we don't see this. Where is all these great openings that Hashem is supposed to open up for us? Ah, he says, that's telling us that we are obviously not opening up like the eye of the needle. If we would open up that little bit, like the hole of a needle, then Hashem would open up for us great things. It's a sign that we are not doing our part, even the minimally. Brings from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe was leading the flock of Yisro, and he came to Har Elokim, and he came to the burning bush. He saw a strange thing. The burn is bushing. The bush is burning, but it's not burning. It's on fire, but it's not burning up. So Moshe went to see what's going on over here. Why isn't it burning up? So the pasuk says, "Vayar Hashem kisar lirot, vayikrai lav Elokim itachasneh." Hashem saw that he went to look, then Hashem spoke to him. Now, what does it mean, sar lirot? He went aside to look. So Rabbi Shem ben Laki says in Midrash Rabbah, "Hafach panav ibit," means he just made the motion to look. Hey, what's going on over here? He took the time to look, and that was enough that Hashem spoke to him. Now imagine if he says, he wouldn't have. He would have ignored it. He wouldn't have made that, to take the first stride to look what's going on over here. Then Hashem wouldn't have spoken to him. Hashem wouldn't have spoken to him, there would be no Moshe Rabbeinu. There would be no leader to take out Klal Yisrael from Egypt. And they would have remained there till they got to the 50th level of Tumah. And Chalila, goodbye Klal Yisrael. It was all started because Moshe Rabbeinu was Sar Lirot. Again, just look, took a glance, what's going on, took the first step. That's all that's necessary, and then Hashem took it from there. Similarly, we find earlier on in Moshe Rabbeinu's life, when he was a little baby and he was put in the Yamsuf, that Bas Paro went down to bathe by the river, and she saw this teva with a baby inside. So what does it say? Bishalch, she sent forth her hand, shalcha yada. And the Gemara Megillah, on Daf Tezvav Amud Bey, says that her hand grew miraculously to 60 amas long, and she saved Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, what would have been if she wouldn't have taken that first stride? If she would have said, oh, look, that basket is so far away. Ah, says, I'll never get it. How am I supposed to reach that? Forget it. She wouldn't have done that. No Moshe Rabbeinu, no Klal Yisrael, no Torah. Was all because she took that first stride. She's, put her arm forth. Oh, we'll see. I'll try. Are we putting our arm forth? Are we trying? Are we putting in that little bit? If we would, we would see tremendous Siyata Dishmaya. Yaakov Avinu had a dream. Bnei Sulamusav Artsa Varosho Magia Shemaima. The ladder was on the ground and the top was in the heavens. Bnei Malachei Elokim Olim V'yordim Bo. And the angels of Hashem were going up and going down. So the question is obvious. Rashi deals with it as well in our parsha. The order is reversed. Where are the angels? The angels are in Shemaim. So the angels, it should have said, come down and go up the ladder, because they're up in Shemaim. So first they have to come down, then go up. So why does it say the opposite? Olim v'yordim bo. So the Midrash says that the vision over here that Yaakov saw is that he saw these ministering angels of the Umos HaOlam. He saw the ministering angel of Bavel go up and then come down. He saw that of Madai, the ministering angel of Madai go up and down. And similarly of Yavan, of Greece, go up and down. And then he saw of Edom going up and it didn't come down. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, in the name of Rabbi Meir in the Medrash, that at that time Moshe Rabbeinu was scared. He said, perhaps, Chas v'Shalom, just like these, went up, but they went down again. So maybe same thing's going to be with me. Maybe I'll go up. I'll have success, but I'm going to come down. So Hashem says to Yaakov, don't worry. Vata al tira. You shouldn't fear. If you go up, you're never going to come down. Don't worry. Your success is never going to falter. But the Midrash says, Lo himin velo Allah. He didn't believe what Hashem said. So he says, no, I'm not taking any chances, said Yaakov ben Yehuda, and he didn't go up. The Midrash concludes and says that Hashem said back to Yaakov, if you would have believed, then you would have gone up. In fact, you would not have come down. But now that you didn't believe and you didn't go up, in the future your sons will be enslaved to these Arba Malchuyos. So says Rav Yaakov, we, of course, beyond our comprehension, what does it mean Yaakov didn't believe, he didn't go up? But when it comes to us, we understand quite well sometimes what it means of not believing and not going up. Meaning, throughout our lives, we have various opportunities to go up, to rise in our ruchnius, take advantage of certain special situations where we can grow and do great things and build our olam haba, but we don't take advantage of it, as if we don't believe and therefore we are not going up. This is something we have to work on to take advantage. When we see windows of opportunity, we have to chop, grab onto it, and take full advantage. Brings a couple of interesting stories. Once, the stipler, that's all, Rav Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky, he was learning as a bacher in Bialystok. When he was still a bacher, he put out his first sefer called Shari Tfuna. The Chazon Ish, that's all, he saw the sefer and he was very impressed that such a sefer was put out by a bacher. So he looked into who the author is and he thought, wow, this is obviously a big, big Talmud Chacham, and I'd like to mishadach, make a chiddach between my sister, Chazon Ish said, and this young man, the stipler. So they arranged a meeting. They're going to meet in an inn near Vilna. Fine. So the stipler got word that when the meeting was. So he started to plan a schedule. Now, what was the stipler's learning schedule in those days? He used to learn 36 hours straight and then sleep, meaning he would learn a day, a night, and a day. That's 12, 12, 12. That's 36 hours. Day, night, day. Then he would have a night's sleep. And then once again, day, and then night sleep. That was his learning schedule. 36 hours straight of learning, non-stop learning, and then a night sleep. So when he got word of the when the meeting was going to be, his shidduch date, with his chazanisha's sister, so he knew he had to travel, take about a 5-hour train ride. So his plan was as follows. He's going to extend his learning, and instead of just having a day, night, and day, he's going to learn day, night, and day, and another night, and then another half a day, which takes us to make the cheshbon about 55 hours. And then, during the 5-hour train ride to where he's going, near Vilna, he figured, I'll sleep in the train. So I'll learn extra, 55 hours instead of my normal 36, and then I'll sleep in the train. Okay. Rabbos machshavos b'levish. Not always what we plan happens. And he learned for 5 hours straight. And when he went in the train, though, he noticed that the upholstery of the train was real upholstery. It wasn't like plastic or wood seats or whatever. It was actual material. It was upholstery. So he was worried that, who knows, maybe there's chutneys in the upholstery. So he decided not to take a chance and sit down on the seats, and he stood during the 5-hour train ride. Now, standing in a train ride means you're not sleeping. Make a cheshbon. So now we're up to 60 hours of being awake. He finally arrived at his destination, and he noticed that the potential Kala, Chaznisha's sister, and she was with her brother, Amir Karelitz, they hadn't yet arrived. So he said, Baruch Hashem, they're not here, so I'll take advantage and chaparayin, a little snooze, I'm a little bit tired, but not for 60 hours. So he found a little corner, and he said the Birkas HaMapil, Kriyat Shema Lamita, and wouldn't you know it, lo and behold, he just finishes saying the bracha, and they show up. So now what? So he disobeyed the bracha. As we know, you're not supposed to talk after the bracha before you sleep. So he's trying to trying to hint to them that he has to sleep and he can't talk. And they're looking at him like, who is this guy? Anyway, so somehow he, hopped a little snooze for a couple of minutes. And, at least so he wasn't mafsik from the bracha. And he went into the shidduch date. So I start talking to him, but you can imagine, he's literally dead tired. He hasn't slept. And as we also know, the stipler was hard of hearing as well. So here's a person that, as it is hard for him to hear, he has to strain himself, and he's so tired. So as they're talking to him, he's straining himself and nodding off and falling asleep right in their faces. Well, you can imagine, this is not a very successful shidduch date. And sure enough, the Chazanisha's sister said, forget it. This guy, he can't hear. He's falling asleep on me. What kind of a, I'm not interested. Not interested. So the Chazanish asked his sister, how did it go? And she said, forget it. This guy, he can't, he's hard of hearing. He's falling asleep on me. He says, what? He says, I got to check into this. So the Chazanich researched and found out exactly what happened. And he heard really the whole story, how he was up learning for 55 hours and stood because it was chashash of shatnez, and saw that the way he acted was because of his godless. So he told his sister the story and said, listen, this is a great person over here. That's why he acted the way he did. He doesn't hear. So he said, maybe he doesn't hear, but everybody said, Yishmu'u alav, vishmu'u elav. In the future, everybody's going to hear of him, and they will, Yishmu'u elav, and they're going to listen to him. He's going to be a great posek one day. So what happened, she took advantage, and she decided to go into it, and she married the stipler. Was it a good decision? Ha! Can you imagine being the wife of the Gadol Hador? And having a son, Yabal Chaim Tovim, or Chaim Kanievsky as your son, says can't have more naches, having more greatness than that. Here's a person that it was close, but she took advantage of this opportunity and saw greatness from it. On the other side of the coin, we have a story where it ended up a little differently. There's once a gvir, a wealthy man, and he wanted a daughter, to marry off his daughter to a great Torah person. So he asked Rabbi Binyamin Diskin, Volkovitsk, and he was the father of the Briskerov, and he was asked by this gvir to find a Talmud Chacham, a big Talmud Chacham that, you know, for his daughter. So he pointed out Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, Spector, who later became the Posek Ador, the Rav of Kovna, and he said, here's a budding Talmud Chacham for you. So he heard, but he wanted to not just, you know, he wanted to test it out himself. Is it true? Is he as great as this Rosh Hashiva is making him out to be? So what did he do? He invited, his Gvir invited Rav Yitzchak Elchanan to his house to test him. And he brought two big Talmidei Chachamim to learn with them and to see, see if he's really what people may say he is. So he came to the Gvir's house, and they sat down at the table, and they started discussing in Torah. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was so into the learning and as kashas and terutzim and back and forth that on the table there was a jar of jam. And somehow he was so into what he was learning that he started nibbling, taking little spoonfuls of the jam just directly out of the jar, and inadvertently was eating the jam. It looked very strange, you know, who eats jam straight out of the jar? But he wasn't cognizant exactly what he was doing because he was so involved with his learning and asking kashas and answering the kashas in it. Meanwhile, the potential kallis, Gvir's daughter, was watching this. And from from the side, and says, "This, what, are you going to marry somebody who eats jam like this out of the jar?" And she decided, "This is not for me." And that was that. Now, what did she lose out? Can you imagine? If she would have put that aside and saw that beyond this, she could have been married to the Kovner of the Gadol Ador of Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. But no, eating jam, forget it. She didn't take the opportunity. And she lost out big time. It's interesting that as years went by, her father, the Gvir, lost all his money. And she ended up marrying some no-name, some guy. And they also were poor. And they actually came to Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan for help, for support. And she didn't recognize, you know, who this was, that this was a bacher, that used to be the bacher that ate the jam, you know, at her table. She didn't realize this. Yitzchak Elchanan realized it very well, who this woman now has come to him and what she could have had. And this doesn't apply only to Shidduchim. Similarly, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, he was learning in yeshiva. And as in those days, they used to eat by people's homes. They didn't have a dining room in yeshivas like nowadays. They used to eat by people's houses. They were assigned a person to eat by a balabas. So Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was eating by this person. He happened to be a very wealthy man. And, he had good food, etc. And it was good to mechazik him, and, you know, give him strength to learn. So this wealthy man married off his daughter and took in his son-in-law into the business and supported, you know, his daughter and his son-in-law, and they used to eat by him. And they decided, the son-in-law with the, you know, okay of the father-in-law, that he was going to try to convince Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan to come into the business. They saw he's a very bright person. It would be great for, he's honest, could be a good bookkeeper. So this son-in-law would say, here and there, drop hints and said, why don't you, work a couple hours a day and, you know, you make a living and you wouldn't have to, you know, eat by other people. You'd have your own money and whatever. Well, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan heard this and said, I can't stay here anymore. These people are trying to get me away from my learning and I can't have this happen. So he dropped it. He left that place. So where did he eat after that? He couldn't find a person who had as much wealth, and he ended up eating by very, very poor people. He had very, very little to eat. He was mamish living, starving. He suffered tremendous starvation, But what can you do? He says he's not going to stay in a place where they're trying to get him out of his learning. Well, as we know, that was his start, but he became the great Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, Rav of Kovno. And many, many years later, he was visiting Vilna, after he became the Gadol Hador. He was visiting Vilna, and this very old man, amongst other people, many people came to get brachas from him, etzah from him. This old man comes up to him and says, listen, I'd like to make a deal with you. He says, I'm a very, very wealthy man, and as you can see, I'm very old, and I didn't do much learning in my life, and I'd like to have a portion in Olam Haba. I know you're a great rabbi, and I'm very rich, so I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal. I'll give you half of my wealth, and you give me half of your Torah learning that you learned in the past. Make a deal, a switch. Half of my wealth, half of your Torah learning. What do you say? Yisachar and Zvulun. Well, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan said, first of all, it's not going to happen because you blew it. You're too late. So he says, what do you mean? So he's first of all, he said, such a thing is not, doesn't work. He brought the Gemara in Sota. We have the brothers Hillel and Shavna. Hillel was learning and Shavna was working. And Shavna said, Hillel, I'll make a deal with you, this very deal. He says, I'll give you money and you give me your Torah learning that you learned. And the Gemara brings a pasuk and Shirashirim, you retain ish as kol hon beito, but you give all your money, boz yavuzulo. You can't buy the Torah with your money. Yisachar and Zvulun works because it's before the time. If you set a deal that from now on you'll support me, then as I learn you'll get half, that's fine. But once the Torah's already been learned, you can't buy it. It's too late. So he pointed out to this old man and he said, you maybe don't remember, but I was the bachar that ate by your house many years ago, and you had the opportunity of supporting me the right way. If you would have continued giving me to eat and supported me, you would have had a great portion of my Torah learning. But because you and your son-in-law tried to get me out and out of the Torah and to work, etc., and I had to leave, so now you blew it. Now you can't, after the fact, buy the Torah learning. It's too late. You had your opportunity and you missed it. So we have to pay attention. When we have different windows of opportunity, like we said, in Ruchnias, in supporting Torah, in learning Torah, we have to chaperayin. Because who knows if these times will repeat and appear to us again in the future. Yaakov Avinu, when he slept and had this vision of the angels, he received tremendous, tremendous brachas from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The brachas of Yerushas Haaretz, inherit the land, the bracha of many children, Ribu Yabanim, and Shmira, Hashem is going to protect them. Tremendous, tremendous things he received, brachas and promises when he had slept. We find something very strange. It says, Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso, Yaakov got up from his sleep, and he says, Achein yesh Elokim b'makom hazeh. Yes, there's God in this place. V'anochi lo yadati. And I didn't know this. Rashi says, famous Rashi, Sheim yadati lo yashanti b'makom kadosh kazeh. If I would have known, this is what Yaakov was saying, V'anochi lo yadati, I didn't know. Meaning, if I would have known, I wouldn't have slept in this holy place. Meaning what? He said, I wouldn't have slept. I wouldn't have slept. If he wouldn't have slept, he wouldn't have gotten all these tremendous promises and brachas. What do you mean you wouldn't have slept? So Yaakov brings a beautiful mashal. L'mad Avraham Domer. Says, there was once a Talmud Chacham who was learning very stark, but he had quite a few children, and he didn't have money to support them. They had very little food, and they were very poor. But he didn't want to go out to work. He loved the Torah. He wanted to continue learning. But what was he going to do? He needed support his family. So what, in fact, did he do? So, as we know, that a person's parnassas, mizonas, is set from in every Rosh Hashanah. Aye, but maybe there's a gzera that he shouldn't have money. Yeah, but we also say, tshuvo tfilat staka, mavir nesroa gzera. So he goes, I gotta be strong in my tshuva tfilat staka. So, Rosh Hashanah rolls around, and he davens with tremendous kavana with all his might, and he so too the whole Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and then comes Yom Kippur, and he's crying out to Hashem, please, please, please. What happens? Ne'ilah rolls around, and he's tired after this long, hard 10 days, and here's now the last days of Yom Kippur, of his, all his davening is avodas Hashem. And as he's standing there on at Ne'ilah time, he nods off a little bit, his eyes close. What happens? As he's taking this little nap, he sees in front of him six numbers. Clearly, these six numbers. Then he wakes up. And he feels that, I think this must be the six numbers for the lottery. Right? What else could it be, these numbers? So sure enough, the next day, Motzei Yom Kippur, next day, he goes to the booth with the where they sell the lottery tickets, takes a form, and he fills out these six numbers. Erev Sukkos is the draw. He quickly looks it up in the paper, which number is one, and lo and behold, the six numbers he chose were the exact six numbers that won. He, in one moment, became a multi-millionaire. You can imagine. Oh, Zman Simchaseinu is the Erev Sukkos. Zman Simchaseinu, what Simchas? Now he can sit and learn now as much as he wants and besheke with the. It's wonderful, right? Now, do you think for a moment that this Avreich would say, you know, I'm so upset. I shouldn't have nodded off there in Shul during the Ila. Think of that would cross his mind? Of course not. Lafech, he's saying, boy, am I happy that I fell asleep during Ne'ilah. Because it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have found these six numbers in front of me. And I wouldn't have had all these millions of dollars and be able to sit and learn. So Baruch Hashem, that I nodded off during Ne'ilah. Right? That's probably his attitude. Well, back to Yaakov Avinu, that chura should have been Yaakov Avinu's attitude. He fell asleep at this place, but what? He got these tremendous brachas. He won the lottery. Nachala, Eretz Yisrael, sons, Shmir, everything you can ask for. So, yet Yaakov Avinu was upset. Oh, I slept in this holy place. I shouldn't have. So what do we see from here? We see from here a big lesson. That is, that the end doesn't justify the means. The brachas, Eretz Yisrael, it's all very nice. What Hashem wants to give, what Hashem wants to do, Hashem will do. That's not my business. I have to just do what's right. And what's right means don't sleep in this place. What's going to be about the promises, what's going to, Eretz Yisrael, that's Hashem's business. Hashem can do what he wants to do, give it to who he wants, when he wants, how he wants. That's not up to me. What I have to do is what I have to do. And that is, I have to follow what the Torah wants. And if it's incorrect to sleep in this place, that is what has to concern me, not the end, because the means doesn't, the final end doesn't justify the means, if the means are not correct. Bring some beautiful examples of this. We find by Tamar. Tamar, she had Ruach HaKodesh that with her union with Yehuda, out of that is going to come out the line of Beis David and the Melech HaMashiach. And it's Bereishis Rabbah says, the Midrash, that when she was pregnant, she would tap her stomach and say, I'm pregnant with kings, I'm pregnant with Goalim, with redeemers. Yet what happened? When it was, Gzerah was on her, Hotziyu of Atisaref, that she has to be burnt at the stake, and when she was pregnant, she could have said, well, excuse me, Yehuda, I should be burnt to the stake. I'm pregnant from you. She could have said that and saved herself. And she had good reason to, because she knew that she had inside of her the Mashiach. It was going to lead to the Mashiach. So she could have said, look, I got to do this. And Yehuda's not going to be so happy and I'm going to embarrass him a little bit, but I got to do what I got to do. No, she was worried. She's just, you know, gave a hint. If Yehuda wants to admit it, he can admit it. But if he doesn't admit it, she'll be burnt at the stake. What's going to be about the Mashiach? Once again, Mashiach, all very nice. That's Hashem. Hashem will take care of it. He can do what he can do. I have to do what I have to do, says Tamar. And the halacha is that a person has to noach lo ladam shim sorat mo la tochif shana eish ve'al yabin pnei chaviro barabi. You have to be go into a fiery furnace and not embarrass somebody. That's what I have to concern myself about. What's going to be the Mashiach? That's Hashem's business. Similarly, fine with Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem wants to send Moshe Rabbeinu to take out Klal Yisrael from Egypt. So what did he say? Shlach Nabi Ati, Shlach Hashem. You have to send Aaron, not me. Aaron will be slighted. And even though the Midrash Rabbah says that Im Ein Ata Golam, Ein Acher Golam. Hashem knew that if Moshe is not going to take them out, nobody's going to take them out. So again, Moshe Rabbeinu said, listen, first of all, not me, Aaron. So that Hashem took care of, and he said, don't worry, Hashem, Aaron won't be slighted at all. He'll be happy. It's okay, don't worry about Aaron. And then he said, yeah, but I swore to Yisro that I'm not going to leave without his permission, so I got to ask permission from Yisro. Let's say Yisro would have said, no, nothing doing, you can't go. Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have gone. What do you mean Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have gone? And what do you mean if Aaron would be slighted, Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't go? What's going to be with Klal Yisrael? What's going to be with the Torah? What's going to be with the Geula? Again, those are Hashem's inyanim. Moshe, I got to do what is asked of me, what the Torah wants of me. I have to make sure I don't slight anybody. I have to make sure I keep my promises to Yisrael, etc. That's what I have to do. The greater picture is in the Shem's hands. Let him do what he has to do. I have to follow the halacha. One last example, and with this, find by Esther. He brings an interesting stira. The one hand, it says, Lohigida Esther es haman ves moladata, ki Mordechai tziva aleh asher lo sagid. That Esther didn't say, reveal to Achashverosh, you know, where she's from, where her pedigree, what her pedigree was. Why? Because Mordechai said that she shouldn't. Rashi there says, why not? Why didn't Mordechai want her to reveal? In other words, she really came from very, very high pedigree. She was from the Mishpacha of Shaul HaMelech. And if they would have known this, so they might keep her and say, well, she's very chashev. But Mordechai wanted them to think that she's from some lowly family and get rid of her, so she wouldn't have to stay there and be the queen. So he said, don't say anything, don't say where you're from, so this way you'll be able to leave. They'll think you're from a lowly family and they'll kick you out. And that's what we want you to get you out of there. Fine. But then we see a Pella. Next pasuk. What does it say? Every day Mordechai went to see what's doing with Esther. Now listen to this, Rashi. Amar, he says, Lo eira latzadek et zu shati lakach lebeis ha-melech, ela shatida lakum lehoshia l'Yisrael. He says, why was she taken? It's not a coincidence that Esther was taken to this king. It must be that in the future, you know, she's going to save Klal Yisrael. Of course, which she did. So therefore, he walked by every day to see what's going to happen. She's obviously here because she's going to save Klal Yisrael. Boy, let's see what's going to happen. So he says, it's a stira. For pasuk before, Mordechai saying, don't tell them where you're from because we're going to get you out of here. Next pasuk, he's saying, well, she's going to save Klal Yisrael, so let's see what's going on over here. Boy, she's obviously here to save Klal Yisrael. So what is it? Is she supposed to be there? Not supposed to be there? It's a stira. So he says, Einachanami. He says, it's not a stira. It's like we said. Really, it's true. Hashem put her there to save Klal Yisrael. But that's Hashem's doing. And Mordechai was wondering, what is Hashem going to do? But, as far as he's concerned, he's got to act like We, down here, we human beings have that. We have to do what the Torah wants of us. We can't worry about Hashem's grand master plan. And therefore, Mordechai said, look, don't tell them who you are, where you're from, because we got to get you out of there. You're suffering, and that's what we got to concern ourselves with. You shouldn't be living with this guy. We got to get you out. That is what concerns us. The greater picture, Hashem obviously put you here to save Klal Yisrael. Probably true, but that can't concern us. That's Hashem's business. We have to do what we have to do. Therefore, he says there's no stira. So we should do what we have to do. Make sure we keep the Dalet Amos of Halacha. And in fact, as we mentioned, if we do our part down here, then Hashem will arrange his master plan that everything should work out, of course, only for the best. And we should see through our actions and through Hashem's actions the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu b'mhirah bimeinu.